The Breakfast Club.
Adam White is a gold medalist in our eyes, and he's back again on a Wednesday morning. Good morning, Whitey.
Yes, good morning to you, Daniel. Welcome to the program.
Lovely to be here for the first time today.
Thank you very much.
Shippy stuff.
Thank you very much.
How's your world going? You look concerned. Your furrowed brow. Why are you furrowed?
I'm just trying to work out whether I'll answer that honestly or just sort of continue on.
Well, you can do anything with our listeners. They'll appreciate all sorts of conversation and honesty from you if you want to tell the truth.
So, okay. In the last 24 to 48 hours, I was involved, not in an incident as such, but an experience where I got petrol. And when I got petrol, I saw some raspberry Mars bars available to be purchased.
Raspberry?
Raspberry Mars bars.
I haven't come across the raspberry bar.
I had never seen such a thing, ever.
Right.
And then I also saw a lime spider oak 600ml vessel of beverage. So I got both of those because I was intrigued by
it's a milk beverage.
Yes. Mm. It's a real Scott Cooney areas.
Mm, very coon dog.
The Mars bar was a raspberry smash flavour.
You can't double up on the raspberry. Oh, no, the raspberry is the bar. The lime is the milk. Okay, the right. Yep, yep.
So the raspberry was the nougat.
You're emotional about this.
Yeah, well, someone could say I just sound unhealthy. raspberry was the nougat. They still had the caramel and then the chocolate coating. They were outstanding. Absolutely outstanding.
As a combination or individually?
Well, both, really. The combination was a little bit odd, but both were outstanding. Both gave me very much a sugar rush.
There's a surprise.
But they were outstanding. So people that like the Mars bar, give this raspberry smash flavour a go because it was much better than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be good, but it went to whole new levels. So that's part of it.
Well, can I just stop you there for a second? I mean, there's a couple of questions on the back of this. Are you a notorious Mars barman?
I love Mars bars, yeah.
So you go to the servo with your petrol station, get your petrol and see the very, very vast array of confectionery that's in front of the counter, which is a trap for young players.
Yep.
And you would often Mars bar?
No, I wouldn't normally do that sort of thing. My dad does that sort of thing all the time.
Right.
Because my mum complains about the wrappers that are left in the car.
As long as you put them in the
car. He says he doesn't do it, but there's evidence to suggest otherwise.
Right.
So it's not usually something I do, but I hadn't had any breakfast. I hadn't had any lunch.
It's a great breakfast of champions.
It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was starving. And it was just there. So it presented itself, and I thought, okay.
Why didn't you have breakfast? We had breakfast yesterday. What are you doing, man?
No, this was Monday.
Oh.
Busy day on Monday.
You're in the war room.
Anyway, so that was good. Really enjoyed it.
So the lime spider beverage. Like, it's a very sickly beverage, the lime spider milk
beverage. Yeah, I'm prepared to take that on.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So there's plenty of more important things to talk about. I didn't mean to go on for so long. But the moral of the story is that I've reached low depths here because regimes and things like that are just not on the table at the moment. And I promised Emma, my wife, that I would lose 20 kilos by her birthday. That was my aim.
Did you mention which birthday?
Her birthday.
Yeah, but which one?
Well,
did it have to be the next one?
No, it had to be this one.
Right.
So it might be a milestone birthday.
Oh.
So that was a sort of thing off in the horizon that I was going to reach. And as you know, I was going quite well. In fact, I was ahead of schedule probably about 5 weeks ago until the latest lockdowns hit. We talked about the home economics situation at home during lockdown, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm in real trouble. So I'm contemplating over the next few days whether we're going to go real dramatic again.
Well, see, we've been through this, Adam.
Because the slow build doesn't work.
Well, tell you what else doesn't work? The fast drop off the cliff.
So I've got to a Monday to decide whether I'm going to go almost like body hack type situation to get through to late October. Because I can't keep doing this to myself. I actually can't.
Righto. Well, we wish you the best of luck with that conversation with yourself for the next 4 days, 5 days.
So you asked me how I was feeling. That's how I was feeling because that's all I've been thinking about over the last sort of...
Is the Mars bar.
18 hours. the Mars bar and the subsequent sort of realization. I'm emotional talking about it.
I'm just not sure that the cliff dropping situation works either.
It does work.
No, it doesn't. Because clearly it hasn't.
Well, it does, and then it's...
Well, here we go. Sustainability is the key to life.
I was told by my painter the other day, who had lost a lot of weight, that 90% of people that go on a diet go back to their former weight.
So, hang on a second. So, we've reached a point where our oracle of information is our painter.
Yeah, because he's lost a lot of weight. Is that where we are now? And he's changed his life, but he said he's in the 10%. Of people that can keep it off.
Well, you're a mentally strong man.
Well, I'm trying to go back to the origins of when I fell off my latest regime, and I think it was that conversation. Because I think I said to Emma at the time, well, I'm off here because I'm definitely going to be in the 90%. What's the point of even trying if I'm just going to go back?
The baker's going to support you off the SMS. He's not going to send in any beautiful treats for us on a Friday morning if that's what's required. He's going to support you.
Well, if I start, I'd start Monday.
This is... Oh, we're in trouble already. We're in trouble already. What did you consume?
I would.
What did you consume over the last 24 hours outside of the Mars bar lime spider situation from a sporting front? What was the highlight? There's been plenty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Boomers last night were outstanding. I mean, this was supposed to be a tough task to get through. The expectation was they would, but... to actually get through, and they didn't start particularly well, and they've ended up winning by about 160 points.
38 points in the end from the Boomers, 97-59 over Argentina. It was a clinic. I was actually disappointed in the end that I stayed up for it.
Because you've wasted...
I could have been
wasted
in bed
hours
an hour and a half
because it was
beforehand.
An easy watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually disappointed because it was so clinical in the end. It was a great performance. You're right. Now, the test comes.
Yeah, it does, because they take on the USA.
Who beat Spain in the quarterfinal.
Got their act together. But I think we've talked about this so much over the last couple of years, because we've kind of followed the progress of the NBL through a variety of different people that we've spoken to. Jeremy LaLiga is a great friend of our program and talked about the progression through, and obviously through Melbourne United, etc. But this is what basketball needs, isn't it? They needed that Australia-USA game for a potential medal. Unfortunately, it's not for a gold or a silver, but even if Australia were to lose, they're still now in the chance that they could win bronze, which is a medal they haven't been able to do. I think it's exactly what they need for basketball to go to the next level. But to see the likes of Patty Mills and Aaron Baines, obviously he's injured now, but Joe Ingles, to see them all in action together on the court, I think it's in prime time. Last night was a little bit late, but it's just what basketball needs to take that next step. We were talking to Dave Colbert yesterday. How can they harness people getting so interested in this Olympics to see these sorts of sports prosper moving forward, talking about sustainability?
Problem with that, I was thinking about that last night actually, is that to really build on it, you need those to be able to get access to those athletes up close. The chances are we'll lose a couple to the NBA the way they're playing. Like Jock Landau won't come back. He'll be in the NBA somewhere.
No, I know. And that's the problem we've talked about it so many times, but that's the problem with basketball and with football, soccer, that the best players don't play in Australia week to week. And you never hear from them or see them outside these sorts of tournaments. So that is the setback. But there's got to be some way of doing it somehow.
Yes, we need a forum for that, as you well know.
We do. Like the Matildas the other night, they're talking about it being the highest viewed female sporting match in history. So it
for peaked, us or yep, in the world?
You know, for us. It peaked over 2 million people were watching the Matildas.
What?
So it's a massive number, 2.17 or something like that. How can they build momentum from that and not be in a situation where Matildas last time captured the hearts of the nation. I think they went out in a penalty shootout at the quarterfinal phase, I think. I remember watching it at the MCG when the footy was on one day. But then they sort of go away.
Well, therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
And it goes back to your point about basketball and soccer. Basketball's been able to tap into it a bit better from a local scene. But soccer, when they all take off, we don't hear from them, we don't see them, we don't know them. And then we've talked about this through the Socceroos from the men's perspective. We don't know any of them because they don't talk to us. They don't talk to anyone. They're all overseas doing their thing, and all of a sudden they're assembled, and we're cheering for them because they're Australian. Well, I certainly am, but I don't know them. I don't barrack for them individually through the team experience because I don't really know them. It's the same with the Matildas. Once they take off, we don't get to hear from them very often.
And that's why I struggle to get involved in the soccer particularly, because I just don't know the players. So, yeah, they're wearing the green and gold, so you obviously hope they do well, but you don't know them. At least with the basketball team, you do know them. You know the names, and you see them play in the NBA and all that sort of thing. So you do get to see them. Whereas, you know, someone like a Daniel Azani or someone like that playing somewhere off in Belgium, well, you're never going to see that unless you're a real diehard Belgium Premier League supporter or whatever they
play. Are you one of those?
Well, no, but I'm a Premier League aficionado, but I might not be shortly. But
when Harry goes, he's going to go to training this Saturday, he said.
Did he?
Yeah, he said he's going to pop up to training on Saturday.
Very worried about that. But there's not the Australians in the Premier League.
Right. No, that was good performance by the Boomers last night. They got through the semi-final match against the US. The Opals, of course, are taking on the US today in... Is it a quarter final for them? Must be a semi.
Quarters, I think.
Quarters. Oh, quarters, it is too. Quarters for them. A big challenge for them because they haven't been playing that well. In fact, they've only won one game and got through to the medal rounds, or the quarterfinals, what do they call them? Elimination rounds.
Mm.
So we'll see what they can do for us today. Did you see the Kookaburras yesterday against Germany?
Yeah, they were good after the disappointment of, obviously, the Hockey Roos to see the Kookaburras get through. And, you know, it was a fairly tight contest, but importantly, they're through. So they now get a medal. It's just a question of colour.
Do you know what I loved? I loved Germany were 2-1 down with 4 minutes to play. They pulled the goalie. So they had an extra midfielder or extra player on the field that was able to move around and get involved. The plus one, as we'll call it. I like that. You might as well go down swinging and lose 3-1 like they did.
Well, Chris Scott clearly wasn't the coach.
No, Chris Scott wasn't the coach. Can't remember the name of the fella. I love the fact they pulled the goalie with 4 minutes to play. Go and win it.
Exactly.
Go and try and win it. It was fantastic. But in the end, it was the Kookaburras too good, 3-1, and they'll play Belgium in the gold medal round probably a couple of days' time, I imagine, from the hockey perspective. So well done to them. Also well done. Now, we had a chat. We're all over the Aussie beach volleyballers. Now, our girls did a great job last night. They took down the number one seeds, Canada, to clinch a semi-final berth at the Tokyo game. So it was a fantastic performance by our girls, and we think that was magnificent. The Canadians hadn't lost a set up until this point. And they smacked them, Talika Clancy and Mariaf Atosha Del Sola. It was a great performance. I watched it actually a little bit when I was flicking around on the channels last night. On the channels of seven, as Dave Colbert would say. Did you not see any of that?
No, I didn't watch that.
They did a good job, the girls.
You know what I'm really proud of?
We spoke to Talika, didn't
yes,
we?
Yes,
yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
I was just about to say, what I am really proud of about our show is that over the last 12 to 18 months, we have spoken to a lot of these athletes that are now starting to get some prominence because of what they are doing, that we actually do know their story because we've spoken to them over the last 18 months. I know your memory's horrendous, but it's happened quite a few times where these athletes have popped up and, oh, we spoke to that person.
Well, we're about...
Talika is one of those.
We're about storytelling.
I know, but a lot of the track and field athletes we've spoken to, we've spoken to Rowan Browning, we've spoken to...
Stewie?
Yes, and also the 200-metre runner.
Which one?
Day.
Oh, Riley.
Day.
I thought you were talking about the bloke.
A number of them that we've spoken to, which is really cool.
Jen Lacaz, whose birthday is it the 4th today? Yes, it is, and she's in the steeple today. On her birthday, have a chance to run for a medal. Ali Beer, we've spoken to, is in the 4x4. Well, that hasn't run yet. Brandon Stark, we spoke to, who did a great job in the high jump the other night.
We've obviously spoken to a lot of the swimmers who are a little bit more high profile, but I'm proud of what we do on the show, the amount of those athletes that we've spoken to that, you know, add context to the events that they're participating in and a bit about their story.
Now, I got a very surprising text yesterday from the world champ.
Right.
Very surprising text. She said, I've just seen the greatest race in Olympic history. This is from the world champ. Now, the world champ's a casual observer, I would say, of of the Olympic movement.
And it wasn't the race to the Raspberry Mars Bar shelf.
Wasn't the race to the Raspberry Mars Bar Lime Spider shelf. And I've texted her back and I said, what? What are you talking about? Which one? Where? And she goes, the 400 meter hurdles. She said, you've got to watch it. You've got to watch it. I don't know where I was. I wasn't near a telly. And you've got to watch it. It's the greatest race I've ever seen. So she was genuinely excited. The world champ is an active person. She likes activity, but she's not a sports person as such. Certainly not a sit down and watch the Olympics sort of person. She should be working. Let's be honest. Her job is to be there 9 to 5 working. Home office woman at the moment. Might have been at the lunch break. So I did. And I must admit, my mind was a little bit blown by Carsten Vorham and his performance in the 400 metre hurdles. First man in the history to go sub 46. Now, try and run 400 metres in less than a minute. Just try it. Most people out there. It's not going to happen. So then you've got to work out how to jump over however many hurdles. I'm not sure how many hurdles there are in a 400 metre race. While you're doing that and get sub 46. It's the extraordinary physical feat is quite remarkable. We spoke about the speed of the 10,000 metres and the 5,000 metres yesterday, which is ridiculous. But to be able to run that time and jump as many things in the middle of it as he did yesterday, 10 hurdles in the 400 metres, thank you, Frank, was something extraordinary. And he blew them away. The second place getter was very good too, don't get me wrong. But he blew them away. It was so exciting. And I'm not a hurdleman. But that was so exciting. I even got the world champ off her chair. The Olympics have been, some of the great moments have happened in the last 11 days. It's been captivating sporting theatre.
Well, it was a world record by nearly a second.
Yep.
Which, so to carve off that amount of time off the world record over 400 metres was extraordinary in itself. He has a big reputation, and he wasn't as impressive in the semi-finals as I think they thought he was going to be. And there was the Brazilian that did really well in the semi-final, in the other semi-final. And then to watch him get beaten by nearly 50 metres in the final,
yeah,
it just shows how much better he was than everybody else. Because as you said, the American that finished second, he was never going to get there.
Although between the 200, with 200 to 100 to go, that stretch around the bend, I thought he was going to get him. He looked like he was gaining on him.
Yeah, but then whenever he got close, he went, nah, sorry, mate.
Yeah, there was a bit of that. Yeah. It was disdain.
But it was almost like that's what helped get him to the world record, because he was nuisance value enough that he had to sort of push a bit harder.
So cool.
No, it was really good. And from Norway as well, like a bit of a random country to be so good at athletics, you know, at that sort of, you know, usually 400 metres and then down to 100 metres is usually the, you know, the Central Americans or the, you know, from the West Indies or America or these sorts of, and that's where we're seeing, I think, something that Jason Richardson put up on Twitter over the last period of time, just the amount of different countries that are getting medals in track and field. And I think that's so good.
The top three of the podium runners all ran sub 46.78, which was the 1992 mark, world record mark, all three on the podium. So they've gone bananas. Absolutely bananas, which was very, very cool. The other cool thing I'm not sure if you caught it, but I hope you caught some of it, was the men's pole vault last night. It's such a cool sport. It is.
It's an unusual sport.
It's a great sport. And our man DC, Dave Colbert, was commentating with Steve Hooker. Of course, he won in Beijing in 2008. And they were so good with their insight into the whole event and everything that goes with it. It was brilliant. But this guy, the world record holder, Armand Duplantis from Sweden, he is... Remember how Sergei Bubka was big back when we were hanging out as young people?
Yep.
This kid, I don't know how old he is, I'll find out, but he is so much better than everyone else, it's not funny. And he is so quick on the runway, and he is so dynamic on the pole. He brained him, absolutely brained him. There was a bit of pressure on him. Now, he's 22 in November, our man. He's just a kid. And he looks like he's 16. Looks like he's still in school. But he is so far and away better than everyone else on the planet. It's hilarious.
Did he go that arrogant approach where he doesn't even bother with the lower, you know how they,
yeah, sort
of
pass.
The good ones sort of come in late because they don't have to worry about the lower levels?
He did a couple of jumps. No, he jumped up until there was only two of them left. I think he jumped three times. Yeah, the American who did a good job, did a PB. He jumped three times. And then so he got the gold medal, and then which was 5.97, I think it might have been. Might have been 6.02, whatever it was. And then the other guy bombed out. And then he went, took it to 6.19, which is the world record, his own world record. Took it at 6.19. And his first jump at the world record, he cleared it by about 85 centimetres. But he came down and clipped his chest, and it was all over on the way down. But he is so good. If you get a chance to see any of the highlights, it's just he's so dynamic. It's such a – I reckon it's a great sport, pole vault. It's stupid, and it's scary as all hell because a guy fell for 4.5 metres and did his ankle in the warm-ups or the preliminaries because the pole didn't go well. But it's such a dynamic sport, and you have to be so strong to get yourself up for that height. God, I love it. I just love it. It's so good.
I just love the arrogance of it where you can, as I said before, they put the bar at a certain level and the good ones just go, oh, please, please. You're actually going to ask me to jump at that level? I wouldn't have thought so. And they're like competing for hours and the other, they've just got their AirPods in just, or, you know, they're just walking around. Come back to me when you give me a height that I'm interested in.
Well, it's interesting because there's a feat of mental endurance too. I was talking about this last night. These are the things you learn with excellent people in commentary. The event itself had gone for two and three quarter hours. Mm. And they'd warmed up for an hour before that on track and then warmed up outside for another hour before that. So it's a 5-hour experience, basically, which is a long time to be sitting there just waiting and jumping three times for our man Armand, or Mondo, they call him. So it's a fascinating thing. That's what I love about the Olympics. You see some of the most dynamic, well, clearly the most dynamic athletes on the planet, and they are so good. And you just, I'm one of those guys. I don't know what you're like or our listeners are like. I'm one of those guys that tries to put myself in that situation and pretend that I could at least be capable of fulfilling the craft or whatever it is that is happening in front of me. But the pole vault, I just don't get how you get to that point. I don't understand how you get your body to do those things.
You sound like my son. I had swimming lessons last night for the kids, and Campbell said to me, he said, I'm really confident, Dad, tonight. I really think I'm going to go well. I said, why is that? Oh, I've been watching the swimming. I've been getting some tips. He almost drowned at one point, thinking he was so much better than what he was. Well, he was trying a new technique, new stroke strategy. He had to be saved by the teacher.
You need to get Thorpe to do some analysis of his technique.
The teacher said something along the lines of, I don't know what you were doing there, Campbell, but good trying. She feverishly went to get it.
I don't know if swimming's the sport you try new things in if you're not overly accomplished in the pursuit, because you can die.
So I was thinking last night, oh, that's good, Cam. That's good confidence, because he's not the best of swimmers. He's quite relatively new to the discipline. I think, I wonder where he's got this confidence from. Because of the lockdowns and stuff, the kids, it's not just school, but things like swimming lessons, they've lost all momentum because they haven't been able to do it. But he'd been watching the Olympics and he thought he was going to go really well. Wow, that was a bit of a setback.
Not quite his moment last night, but it was Jamaica's Elaine Thompson-Herah who made Olympic history last night with the 200-metre victory, second fastest in the history of personkind, and behind only Flojo's world record, which still stands, 21.53. So the 100, 200 twice. No one's ever done that in female sprinting. The only other person on the planet to have done it is Usain Bolt in the men's. That was pretty exciting too.
There's a stack of text messages here. Emma George was almost the one that revolutionised pole vaulting in this country.
Big business, wasn't she?
She was. Yeah. She was the former circus athlete that turned into a pole vaulter, but she was definitely before Steve Hooker.
Yep.
Putting pole vault on the map here in Australia. A lot of things around the diet situation. A lot of people talking about that keto thing. And there's another one there for hypnosis. Would you do that?
Hypnosis?
Yeah.
As a last resort.
Because we're both mentally strong, we would break the system.
Well, they wouldn't be able to get in.
No.
They wouldn't
be able to
get inside our mind. How do you get inside a steel trap? How do you penetrate the trap? This is my question, my concern. It's just a waste of money, isn't it, really?
Well, that's my view.
If you can't penetrate the trap. Always great to be a part of the world of Sharon McMahon, the world's greatest ever netballer. Back again on a Wednesday morning. Good morning, Smack.
Good morning, Huff. How are we?
Going great.
That's good.
Were you in action last night?
In action on the couch, yes.
In action on the couch.
I was watching the action from the couch from a number of perspectives. The netball was on. The Vixens had their second last game on Monday night.
Didn't go well.
Didn't go according to our plan. Although some might say that's what the entire season's been like
in many ways.
So we've got our final game for the Vixens this evening against the Firebirds. So that'll round out the season for the Vixens. The Magpies rounded out their season with a fairly very big loss to the Fever.
75-55 last night at Nissan Arena in Brisbane.
Yes, which puts Fever on top of the ladder and sitting very nicely, thank you very much, for a charge for the finals.
The Fever.
Yes.
Our girl Stace.
She has got them motoring very, very nicely. So getting very close to the end of normal round. So that'll be done and dusted by this weekend. And then the final series will go on after that. So impacts of quarantining upon return with given what's happening up in Queensland at the moment.
So will they stay or will they come back?
That is something that they can still working through.
Because it's 14 days if they come back after tonight's game.
At the moment. Yeah. Although, and this is part of the layering of what elite sports does and why they're able to operate in environments where other industries or other people are not. So from when the athletes moved from Adelaide to Brisbane, when was that? A week ago? Less than a week ago. They have been living in effectively quarantine conditions. So they haven't even been allowed to go to a supermarket.
Right.
So they have not been allowed to do anything. So there is a little bit of, well, there's some discussions happening. So they were able to get exemptions to continue to play the games in Queensland, which was great work by the league and being able to continue that season going on under very, very strict COVID protocols, as we call them. And there is some hope that because of that, they may not be locked down in quite the same way when they return back to Melbourne. But that's still being worked through.
Mm.
Yeah.
After a year that the Vixens have had to have to come home from quarantine and sit in quarantine for further 2 weeks, that sounds like it's got hair on it, Whitey. It's got whiskers on it.
Yeah, it's exhausting just talking about it,
to be
honest.
It's got whiskers on it.
It is.
Hey, just what random one, because your former teammate Liz Ellis has been big on this, about the fact that netball should be in the Olympics.
Yes.
Have you got a view on that?
Yes, I would love netball to be in the Olympics. I think it is a sport. It's funny when you look at the stats around netball, it is played far more widely than you realise.
72 nations.
Correct. And it is a largely Commonwealth sport, a bit in line with what we see with cricket. So a lot of the cricketing nations and netball nations are very similar. But there it is, as you say, 72 nations play it. And yeah, I think that for netball internationally and the strength of the sport and the health of the sport, having inclusion in the Olympics would be huge. So I know that there's a lot of thought around that being done at the moment, particularly with the Brisbane Games and that being potential to get included in one way or another. So watch this space. But I'm for it. What do you think, Whitey? You don't think it's up to that?
Well, no. If they can have rock climbing in it, we can have anything in it. I'd be sort of suggesting we could have Scrabble and Monopoly and all sorts of things if we're going to have rock climbing.
Speed climbing things.
Speed climbing, is it?
Speed climbing.
Yeah, with egg and spoon race, and we could really open it all up if they're going to have that. So I would trim it right back. So, but if they're going to have it the way it is, it has to be in the conversation. If you're going to have softball, if you're going to have baseball, if you're going to have European handball, those sorts of sports, I think netball has to be in the conversation.
Yeah, and I mean, those sports you mentioned are traditionally Olympic sports or have been at different times across the journey. Netball, I think, was an exhibition sport a while back, but it's never been involved in the main part of it. And I guess from a sport perspective, we're just looking at ways as well to grow the game
and, yeah, and, that, yeah, and that's,
strengthen yeah. it internationally, because that's what we need. For the health of the sport, we need that. We can't continue just to have the top, yeah. you know, even three or four nations be the ones that are completely dominant.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think cricket's becoming a lot like that as well in a lot of ways, that there's so few that are good at the sport these days. But I mean, if,
Australia
again,
being one of them, of course.
Yeah, but you've got Australia. Australia's got banned by Bangladesh.
So few good of it.
Pounded by Bangladesh. The thing is, I lost my train of thought. That's right. Rugby sevens, for example, gets in.
Yep.
And that's a very new sport, really.
Yeah.
And then a traditional female sport like netball isn't getting a look in. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's possibly a good point, because you know we've got skateboarding, which it was an interesting one to watch for me. There was a lot of falling off, not a lot of staying on the skateboard. Surfing, rock, yeah. fast climbs.
But this is the problem when you open it up.
Yeah, but also those sports. I think the Olympics certainly have an eye on, you know, attracting a different younger demographic. So that's the reason they're pulling those sort of sports in, because they aren't the traditional sports. Yeah. So potentially for netball, you know, that may be something that they need to look at. Is it the traditional game that gets in there, or is it something that's a little bit altered? I mean, 3-on-3 basketball, for goodness
yeah,
sake.
Yeah, well, there you go. And that's my point. If you've got that,
yeah.
I think netball has a leg to stand on, yeah. to say.
And maybe we need to think outside the box in terms of the actual product, because it might not be the traditional game that is as attractive as what we might think.
Yep.
Mm. Yep. I think we have... I must admit, I think we come from a position of bias when we talk about netball, because we're really good when we get a medal.
Yeah.
So we're really keen to rush it in.
Yes.
Or we should get a medal, so we're really keen to rush it in. I think I'm a bit with you, Whitey. We're too much going on at the Olympics that doesn't really fit with the Olympic mottos, I wouldn't think.
No, but so there's two arguments would be to different. It, isn't it?
If you're going to open it up, the netball should be there, I think.
This is the thing, is there's two arguments. It's what sports should be in the Olympics, but then when you look at what sports are in the Olympics...
But even like golf and tennis, like, that's not really... For me, they're not Olympic sports.
No, I'm a bit the same with those two sports, with the majors that go along around that. And another part of the conversation with netball being involved in something like that is that it is a female sport. So with all the other team sports and all the other sports that are included, there's a men's competition and a women's competition. So that's another layer on what we could look at, and potential for that to be a growth area for what netball's doing.
Let's see, you went out in the circle just doing your thing, Whitey, bodying a position.
Have you ever played netball before, Whitey?
Absolutely, I have.
What position did you play?
Dynamic GA.
How was your shot?
Oh, good. But, you know, I would pass it off to the taller person.
Half?
I
you would have
would
played.
Push up.
You
I'd
would
push
have
up.
Better played a bit of
dominant
mid-quarter.
Dominant mid-quarter. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be muscling in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe. Yeah, centre, wing defence, read the play so well.
Yeah.
Really pivotal, rebounding off halfback sort of stuff.
Good.
That was my go.
I like
Loved
it.
Loved it. Loved it.
I like it.
I want to ask you about, because you have experience in these matters, Sherelle. The Jack Viney situation, who last night was suspended for 2 weeks by the AFL Tribunal for, what do they call it, serious misconduct with the elbow, stray elbow sort of pressed down at Sam Collins' throat and slash jaw. You've been an MRO or MRP person for the AFLW throughout your time. What say you when you see things like this? And what's your, as someone who knows the game and been involved in the judicial process, but also as a fan, when you see what Jack Viney did on the weekend, what do you think straight away?
Horrible. Absolutely horrible look. And it, it just, to me, it brings to mind some not great things in terms of that action. And so, you know, I think that there was a lot to look at potentially, but also, I don't know, what did you think about the outcome in the end? Do you think it was
2 weeks
enough?
I'm okay. Yep.
Yeah. I
said yesterday I would have been happy with one, I must admit.
Yeah. I thought the 2 week, I know we just heard Jack Revolt then talk about maybe there should have been a little bit more. Did we? Did I hear that?
Did Jack say that in 360 last night, did he?
Yeah. That maybe he thought three or four might have worked. I mean, maybe that would be a little bit over the top, but two, for me, I think it sits well. I wouldn't have wanted it to be one. I didn't like it. I thought that it was something that we do not want to see.
No,
on the field
I agree
all.
With you about that. I'm not sure through the... There was a table of offences because you had to go and defend the action without the ticking of the boxes. But I would have been happy with, well, not happy, I would have accepted one.
One.
On the basis that it wasn't ever really going to hurt him. It was just a really bad look. It was a stupid thing to do. When you throw elbows like Bud did last week, which really could hurt, and you get off that, that annoys me a bit. So, well, I understand that.
Yeah, there's a bit of conjecture last night because Jack Viney kind of went up there pretty much straight away and said, look, shouldn't have done it. Bad look. You know, I accept responsibility. I plead guilty to the charge.
I'd like to acknowledge and accept that this incident isn't a great look for the sport, was the quote.
And then they worked out a little bit later on that the charge was actually for putting the forearm into the throat or neck region, and which has the potential for some really serious consequences. And they almost changed to pleading not guilty at the very end because it was like, well, hang on a sec. We'll plead guilty to the action, but it was actually to the jaw, not to the throat. So there was a bit of... And Adrian Anderson, who knows the system back to front, was actually the one that was defending Jack Viney last night. So there was a bit of confusion around all of that, and then they've ended up landing on two. And the hearing went for over 2 hours.
Well, David Jones QC had to stand the matter down for the moment to actually...
Which was around that...
Work that out, actually, what they were defending and what they
exactly
were agreeing
to. Yep.
Yeah, so a bit of confusion setting in, which is... I mean, how that happens... How do you have any confusion when you get into a tribunal? Everything should be laid out. The policy, the situation and policies are, everything's laid out on the table before you get there, the morning of or the day before, so you know exactly what to do when you get there, rather than wasting time and having this situation, which is unacceptable.
So we put a poll up last night on Twitter, and this is interesting about how difficult it can be to be a tribunal person, which both of you have been. Jack Viney gets 2 weeks. Thoughts? Correct, 41%. Too short, 46%. Too harsh, 13%. So that's spread across the board.
Yes. Yes. And definitely tick the disgusting act box, says the Baker off the SMS. Hey, Chris Mayne has been a terrific player in the AFL with Fremantle and Collingwood, 245 games, and he's got 3 to go because he yesterday announced that this would be the end of his AFL career, the 2021 season, and he's been good enough to join us today to take us through it. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to be with you. How long has this been playing on your mind, this decision?
It's been probably there about halfway through the year. I've just been thinking that, do I decide to try and go on again? And, you know, after my manager has been speaking with the club and there's still obviously a little bit of uncertainty around the plans going forward for the club and kind of all the white noise that they were dealing with, there's obviously a little bit of grey area there. So with that kind of in mind and the fact that, you know, dealing with COVID all the time and not being able to see family, it kind of got a bit closer and closer where I thought, you know what, it's time to go home. It's time to pass the baton on to the young boys coming through. And even though my wife said, you know, look, you know, do we want to go again? You know, you're playing really good footy and, you know, you're still loving it. And I just said, look, I think I've enjoyed my time. I've absolutely loved it. I hope I've been able to pass on a lot of knowledge to the boys. Looking forward to stepping into the next chapter of life, whether that's coaching or still playing at waffle level, but getting back home, getting to family, and that was the main aim in the end.
Well, your wife's right. You are playing really well, and I saw you in action live last week, and you are playing a terrific role on the wing there for the Magpies as great defensive cover and forward thrusting activity as well. But you talk about COVID there and the impact that's had on your thought process in the last couple of years. Is it just starting to wear a bit thin, is it?
It's just the challenge of obviously being in Melbourne. Both of our families are in WA. Like, my mum and dad have, the last 2 years, planned to come over and see the kids, and both times have been stopped or set back with COVID because of the lockdowns and the challenges that we face. So my mum and dad haven't even seen my little man yet, and they didn't get to see Billy at that stage either. So for me, that's pretty challenging that they haven't been able to be a part of my kids' lives as much as I'd want them to be. And it's the same with Brit's parents and extended family. Like, they're probably not getting that opportunity to be a part of our kids' lives. So with that in mind, and as much as, you know, I love pursuing excellence and chasing, you know, my dream, I just felt that, you know, I've given absolutely everything to this game, to both organisations, no stone unturned. And I just thought, you know what, it's been an absolutely unreal run, but I kind of want to get back home and and be around family a bit more, given the uncertainty of what we always seem to face and the challenges that's ahead for us in that regard.
Chris, you are going to get very, very close to 250 games, but you're just not quite going to get there. Obviously, this year there's been some concussions and issues around that, and that kind of has prevented you from maybe making that milestone. Did reaching that milestone kind of play on your mind a little bit with this decision?
Oh, look, I would have loved to have played 250, and like you said before, if it was meant to be, it would have happened. But for me, it's a great achievement to be able to reach milestones like that, but it's not everything in my mindset. You know, I desperately wanted to taste that premiership success and unfortunately fell short twice. And I was fortunate enough to be in a part of two really good groups that always challenged in finals. But, yeah, look, it would have been amazing to play 250. But in the end, you know, I'm still really proud of the achievement I did over my career of 14 years and possibly nearly 248 games. So, you never know. I might be picked up as a mid-season recruit next year by Freo West Coast to knock over the next two.
Oh, there you go. We'll keep an eye on that.
The door is ajar.
Exactly. That's definitely think that means it's ajar. Chris, you mentioned the two clubs that you've played with, both Freo and the Magpies. Talk to us about when you did make that move to Collingwood, because it wasn't an easy move for you. Three games in the first season is all that you played, and it did take a while to find your feet in that environment. What was that period of time like for you?
Yeah, at the end of 16, we made a decision, myself and my wife now, that Melbourne was the place to go, and I felt that at the time, for me personally, it was to, I suppose, challenge myself, see what Melbourne was like and the footy world here, and also for my wife, you know, for her to get back to her career and what she loved doing. So when we made the decision to come, you know, you come across thinking everything's going to go perfectly, and then you kind of hit with adversity and challenges, how it all unfolded. And, yeah, it was a really tough year and well-publicised throughout my journey so far, but you know, all I have ever wanted to do was, you know, play consistent footy, be a part of a great organisation, you know, do what I can for the team and hopefully win a premiership. And I knew if I could find a way in and I could build that trust amongst the playing group and the club and then let people know exactly kind of who I am and what I'm about and build those relationships, then, you know, I would hopefully see that the value that they could see in me. And I think it just took time, and I went away after that first year. And as I said before, you know, we cancelled our plans for holidays, you know, which was kind of led by my partner, Britt. She just said, look, let's knuckle down. Let's focus on getting ourselves right. And then, yeah, looked at where there was possibly an opportunity to get in the team, and I saw that as a wing or a halfback. So changed a few things around my game, fitness-wise, and then looked at trying to cement that spot, and fortunately enough, it came through.
How difficult was that, Chris? I wanted to touch on this about changing your role within the team. That takes a lot of courage, and it takes a lot of number of things to be able to reinvent yourself as a footballer coming across from Fremantle. And it's been well documented about the struggles you had early, but to become the reliable player you are now is very different to the player you were.
Yeah, I think I was fortunate enough through my time at Freo under Mark Harvey and Ross that I was kind of exposed to different roles, even though they were sporadic, but I was exposed to them, so I kind of had a little bit of a taste for it. And then all through my juniors, I played as a midfielder, so I always felt confident that I could execute that role. And given the nature of the role, it can be very sacrificial in that way, that it's all about team, so that really suited me. I love playing the game, because it's a team game, and anything that I can do to make my teammates better, I've always thrived off that, and that's probably something when I go out there, is if I can make my teammates better and we can get the job done, then I've had a really good day. So, yeah, it was a challenge mentally to kind of go, all right, 4 days are pretty much done. I need to focus on wing and halfback to make sure I can get back in this team and hopefully play good footy. So I had great support from Scott. I spoke to him at the end of 17, and he supported me, and I think from that moment on, the relationship started to grow and people started to probably see my capabilities. And then when Gary Hocking and Haas became my line coaches, and then when JL came in, I think two great coaches like that, M. Butter and JL, kind of saw my value, and then the relationship that I built with Harbs. As I said yesterday in my speech, you know, I'm really thankful to those people because they made my next chapter at Collingwood really enjoyable.
Tell you who else is growing. Joe Burns is growing because he has been at the Brisbane Heat in the Big Bash for 10 years, 10 seasons effectively in the Brisbane Heat in the Big Bash. But as we learned yesterday, he's coming to the best city in the country to be a part of the Melbourne Stars. The wrong team, but it's the right city in the country for the Big Bash. And it's great to have him on the program this morning. Joe, good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the intro, and can't wait to get to Melbourne.
Well, that's what all the people say, Joe. It's the greatest city on the planet, so it's going to be quite good. But why, after all these years representing the Brisbane Heat, have you decided it's time for a change?
Mate, there's a lot of reasons, but I think, honestly, when I had the offers in front of me, I was just excited to join the Stars, and I think it was exactly what I needed at this stage of my career. It's a new challenge. It's a very good team. Coming to Melbourne, it's a great spot to come. And, yeah, I mean, everything added in together, it was just an exciting new chapter to join the Melbourne Stars.
Is there an element of coming to the Stars? I mean, Stars have been much touted ever since the Big Bash started. And grand scheme of things, they haven't achieved much. Is there an element of trying to help an organisation like the Stars who've had so much pressure on them to actually perform?
Definitely. I think it's a new challenge. Obviously, even with the Brisbane Heat, I know it was a long time ago, we won a title, I think, BBL2. So I guess to come to Melbourne with that, you know, that agenda to try and win the first title with the club, that was a massive, massive attraction. But also the team is so good. You know, like, there's no reason why this team shouldn't be winning the BBL every year. So if I can play a role in that and I come down and try and serve the team as best I can, I'll keep saying it. It was just really exciting to think about the opportunities.
And Joe, don't listen to half too much about the Renegades being the team to be at. We're big fans of the Stars here too. Don't you worry about that. This is a 3-year deal, which is a significant commitment in terms of where you're going to be for those next 3 seasons. Was that part of the attraction?
No. I think I had longer-term offers from other teams. Look, a long-term deal is always great, but it was basically a cherry on top of the cake, really. I think in the BBL, with the salary cap, so all your offers are very similar, to be fair. Yep. So it comes down to a lot of kind of off-field things, your ambitions, and honestly, for a short period of time as well, which cities and which teams you'd enjoy playing for. And you know, the boys in the Melbourne Stars are a great bunch, and Melbourne's a great city. So that was a big factor in all of it.
Well, I was going to ask you about the personnel with the Stars. Do you know many of the boys? David Hussey is the coach. Has that been a relationship that you've got prior to you coming to Melbourne?
Yeah, I think the thing with Melbourne is it's a very mature group. As in, I've played a lot with the guys in different teams, different tours over the years. You know, guys like Stoinis, Maxwell, Coulter-Noll, they've been around kind of the same timings that I came into professional sports. So it's nice to, I guess, be on the same side as these guys for once. We used to chasing the ball over the park when they're batting or getting bounced by them when they're bowling. But also with Haas, obviously so much respect for Haas that what he's done at Victoria, and it's nice to be on his side for once. And again, like, it's just nice to pair up with different guys, and I've played against these guys for so long and have such deep respect for them. It's exciting to be on the same team with them.
Joe, what role are you going to play? Because the great thing about you is your versatility, and the Stars sort of mix it up a bit as well. So do you see yourself at the top, or do you reckon it's more that sort of middle order role that you've done really well for at the Heat, kind of surprisingly when it first started?
Yeah, I think probably more middle order. I've said to Haas and to the guys at the Stars that I'm just there to do any role I can. I kind of look at it like the Stars have so many X-factor players that can win you a match, win you a competition. If I can just be consistent around those guys and provide them a level of comfort to do what they do, then, you know, I'm doing my job in the team. And I guess, yeah, you play different roles, but it's all the same outcomes of trying to win cricket games.
Anthony Scott is having a significant impact with the Western Bulldogs, and it's a great story. And yesterday it got even better because he signed on for a 2-year extension with the Western Bulldogs. He joins us on the line this morning. Good morning, Anthony.
Morning, guys.
Can you believe what's happening, or what's happened to you in the last sort of 12, 18 months in your footballing career?
Yeah, not really. I pinch myself every now and again. It's just been, yeah, unbelievable. 12 months.
You've come from local footy, rookie list, and now you've got a 2-year extension with the best team in football. It's a hell of a story, mate. You must be absolutely over the moon with what's happened.
Yeah, absolutely stoked. Yeah, it's been there's been a lot of work that's gone into it. So it hasn't all just happened through sheer luck. I've had to put my head down for a lot longer than the average person that makes it onto an AFL list, so it's certainly a sweet feeling to know that got at least another 2 years at AFL level with, like you said, such a successful side thus far this year, and a really good place to be in the Bulldogs.
And what does that do to your mindset, the fact that they've shown the faith in you to give you another 2 years? I mean, does that ease you, any anxiety? Does it make you comfortable? Does it make you want more? What does it do to you?
Yeah, I think it puts your mind at ease a little bit, knowing that you can explore things, you've got a little bit more time to perhaps work on parts of your game and, yeah, try new things. But, I mean, this whole year I've sort of been making it up as I've gone a little bit because I've had to, but, yeah, I think it's just going to give me a nice springboard to really show what I'm capable of on the footy field.
Anthony, you spoke about the time it took you to get this opportunity, to get this real solid signing here. Were there times when you were playing at that VFL level, when it was taking that time, that you wondered whether you would get there, or was there always a sense of belief for you?
I always had the belief that I was good enough. I had the ability to play at the level. It was just about stringing together enough good footy to actually get on a list. And to me, I didn't even make it onto a list initially. It was stringing enough good footy together to be invited to come down and train with the Bulldogs at the start of this year. And once I got that opportunity, I knew I wasn't going to let that one slip. And, yeah, it was just about being able to put yourself in front of the right people and show what you're capable of.
Yeah, and with everything that goes along with that, when you were coming through, obviously the pay's not quite the same. So you've got a pretty intense work environment too, something to go back to in finance. Are you looking forward to get? Do you miss that? Do you miss that other element that you? I don't think that you're doing that anymore at the moment.
Oh, that was a good experience. I mean, I love playing footy and would choose football over probably just about any other career
that
could offer me. So, I think that's all part of being able to get me to where I am now. I wouldn't change what I've been through in order to get to here. So having a uni degree under my belt, having spent 3 years working at Telstra, one of the biggest corporates in Australia, I think that's all built me up to be the kind of person I am today. And coming in with a bit more of a level head at a football club where it's a pretty whirlwind environment, but knowing that I do have all that to fall back on, and that experience is really handy as well.
And where else would you rather be in the sanctum today than inside the walls of the Hawthorn Football Club? Fair to say, there's a bit happening. Tom Mitchell is our man on the ground there for us in 2021, the Brownlow medalist, who's back on a Wednesday morning. Good morning, Mitch.
Morning, Harf. Thanks for having me on.
And lovely to have you on, especially after a magnificent victory on the weekend, just by the way. There's clearly a lot happening off the field, but on the park in Tassie was a nice afternoon for you guys down there.
Yeah, it was. I think, you know, coming up against a really good offo in Brisbane, and, yeah, obviously the club had copped a bit of heat throughout the week and the weeks prior. So I think, you know, it was really important for the playing group to galvanise and come to play, and yeah, it was pleasing that we did.
What did you expect from the group? I mean, Brisbane were a top four team, looking for top four opportunity in the finals campaign at the end of the season, and the Hawks have been struggling clearly through the journey, although against the better teams have done pretty well of recent times. What did you expect after the week that was, and Brisbane down in Tassie? What were you hoping for?
I was hoping for the result that we got, to be honest. I think Yeah, I think as a playing group, there was, we were the first players that were able to pull on the jersey and have an impact and, steer the ship in the right direction after everything that's been going on. So, yeah, it was really pleasing. The boys put in a really good effort. Got to continue to do the same thing for the last three games and, give Clarko the send-off that he deserves.
Well, you certainly did that. It was quite the performance, and it was almost the complete performance from start to finish, really. I mean, obviously the last quarter, the Lions got it rolling and tried to take the game on a bit more, but it was all set up in that first three quarters. What do you gain out of that? When you have that review about what you can achieve, do you see the light? Do you see what is now possible for this group at Hawthorn?
Yeah, I think it's funny. You kind of touched on it before. We've shown that we can be really competitive with the top teams. I think, beating Sydney, Brisbane, drawing with Melbourne, it's just that consistency to be able to do it against every team. So that's the next component we're trying to figure out, but it is pleasing that we can match it with the top teams.
What's it like in that final quarter that you were outscored after doing extremely well, as half said, in the first three quarters? You kicked 1-3 and the Lions 8-2. So they were coming and they were coming hard. What is it like in that situation where you feel like you've played so well for the first three quarters of a game? Is there something in the back of your mind that's going, oh, please don't let them run over the top of us now?
Yeah, it was a pretty strong avalanche. They were coming pretty hard.
Yeah.
They completely changed their game style in that last quarter. I think it did catch us off guard, especially early in the quarter. And then, we probably a combination of went into our showers, but also a bit of fatigue kicked in. But luckily enough, most of the work was done. But, yeah, it's a tough one. I think we're pleased with, the first three quarters, but disappointed with the last. But I think overall, getting the result we did, we have to be pretty proud of the effort.
So, Tom, what did they do differently through that last quarter, and when did you pick it up? And how do you deal with that on the fly?
Yeah, well, I think they had nothing to lose. As I mentioned, they were down by 8 goals, so the speed of ball movement for them just sort of really lifted, and just more aggressive play, which we'd sort of set up for a different sort of game style in the first three quarters, and it was completely flipped. And just the mark play on rate was through the roof, and they were just sort of going for it because they had nothing to lose, I guess.
Tom, we've spoken to a few of the footy players who have come through here this year about that change in game style, that taking the game on when you hadn't before, the pressure build in ways that you hadn't done before. And a few of the players are... It's difficult in some ways to put your finger on, well, why could we do that in that particular part of the game but not in another? And obviously it was the Lions doing it on the weekend. What's your take on that? Why is it that things can change so significantly within a game?
Yeah, I think it's probably dependent on, the scenarios of the game, like how late in quarters, the time is and... whose half of the ground is being played in, and obviously the scoreboard is a key factor because, you're obviously going to, if you're down, you're going to take more risks. If you're winning, you're probably going to sometimes unintentionally slow yourself up, which can actually hurt you more rather than just playing. So I think it's dependent on a few of those circumstances, but I don't think anyone has the answer. So, I think everyone's still trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
Just keep playing quick, Tom. Keep playing quick.
That's all right.
We talked to Dane Zorko yesterday, and he kind of conceded that Brisbane's attitude wasn't where it needed to be, that they didn't come to play. You clearly did, because O'Meara and then Bruce kicked goals in the first 5 minutes, and you knew this was good Hawthorn as opposed to bad Hawthorn. Do you feel that out in the middle within 5 minutes, or do you feel it before the game that today's going to be good Hawthorn?
Oh, it's sort of hard to say pre-game. I think every individual has a responsibility to get themselves ready to play, and everyone does that in their own individual way. Some guys are quieter, some guys are louder. I think you probably have a better idea once the game is underway. Sometimes in games this year, we've started really well, and you think, oh, it's going to be a good day, but then we have an inconsistent patch, and other days we stick it out and play a good game of footy for the majority of the game. So it's hard to tell, but sometimes, I think we found this year when things are going against us, that's been the trouble. We haven't always been able to stand up as a collective and fight back, and that's probably normal with a young group. We've got a really young group at the moment, especially with the injury list. So it's something we're working through at training.
So to the sensitive topic around what happened last week, what's your overriding emotion as a senior player with how it all played out publicly as late as last Friday?
Yeah, I think there's been an admission from you know, the club and a number of people that things could have been handled a lot better and a lot differently, but yeah. A mixture of emotions, I think, you know, just like everyone else, I guess, initially a little bit surprised, but, you know, also, you know, thankful that I've had the time to play under Clarko, who's such a great coach, and, you know, I owe a lot to him for everything he's done for me, and also a dash of excitement as well for Mitch and what he brings, and he's also been a huge support of mine. So I think it was a mixture of a number of emotions.
So did it ultimately get to the point where they had no other alternative but to do what they did? Could you see, as a senior player, those two working together, whether it be Clarko coaching Mitch doing what he's doing or Clarko director of coaching and Mitch coaching? Like, was it getting confusing for you? Because Ben McAvoy talked to us on this program last week about it was all just a bit of a muddle.
Yeah, I think they, you know, they're both professional guys. They could have found a way to make it work, but I think ultimately it came down to what is the absolute best scenario for the club and playing group moving forward to, I guess, remove any confusion and have absolute clarity on what we needed to do to continue to move forward. And I think speaks volumes of Clarko's character that, you know, he wants the best for the players. And, you know, if anyone lives the values of the Hawthorn Footy Club, the best it would be Clarko, because, you know, he sort of acknowledged that, you know, that maybe there would be a few issues with confusion and things like that. But yeah, we're really excited to play for him this last 3 weeks. I think we saw that on the weekend. Everyone wants to do their absolute best because he's been so good to all of us.
It's widely accepted that Clarko is, if not the best coach, certainly one of the best coaches over the last period of time. Sam Mitchell spent a huge amount, if not all of his career, underneath Alistair Clarkson. You spoke about some excitement about him coming in and taking over. Do you think there will be a significant shift, or because there has been so much time that they have spent together in that player or captain coach situation, that there'll be a lot of similarities?
Yeah, I think it's probably natural that there has to be some similarity just because these guys have worked together for the best part of 20 years. So I'm sure there'll be some similarities, but at the same time, Mitch is, you know, such a smart guy, you know, such a good footy brain. So I'm sure he'll have his own ideas and things like that, which he would like to bring in. And yeah, I think the best thing about Mitch as well is that, you know, working in the development group and with the younger players, he's already built such a great connection with those guys, and you know, the relationships are strong across the whole footy club. Really, like he worked with us in the midfield last year, and you know, he's got a great balance of caring for his players and educating as well. And yeah, I think that's where the excitement's going to come from. It's really, really looking forward to it.
So, would you be expecting a 3-week farewell tour for Clarko, like guitar involved, and just singing
David
Brent style?
Yeah, well, I don't think Clarko wants that, but I think each time we get a chance to pull the jumper on, we'll be doing our absolute best. And, you know, Shawnee Burgoyne's probably on that farewell tour with him. So hopefully, I'm sure there'll be more of a celebration in the last round. But for now, I think we just have to focus on Collingwood, and I'm sure they'll get the send-off they deserve in due time.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.